This is Infants on Thrones, philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Welcome back to another episode of Infants on Thrones. My name is Tom Perry. So, back when I started really thinking about my relationship with apologies, forgiveness, and grudges, I started to inquire to many of my family and friends, and I came across many of them that seemed to react very differently than I did. For example, if I was wronged or if I was on the offending side of things, I quickly realized I had some sort of inner requirement that I needed an apology from the offender. And if I didn't get what I considered what I thought was a proper apology, then I would hold a form of grudge against that person. The reason I did this seemed to stem from a strong inner sense of justice. And when I felt like the scales were completely out of balance, something needed to happen to correct the wrong. But until then, I would place a form of grudge on the offender until I felt like the scales came back into balance. But I was deeply curious why others didn't seem to approach forgiveness the same way I did. Of course, I assumed that everyone had this same inner need or sense of justice already built in them. You know, we all get a heart, so hence we all get the same biological or genetic inner need for justice as well. Made total sense to me. Well, of course, come to find out that many didn't approach forgiveness the same way I did. Some didn't require an apology at all and could easily move on. And I asked myself, how? Why? That doesn't make any sense. And of course, on the opposite side, I saw some ended up being fueled with a insane rage that morphed into a stronger grudge than I could even perceive, or even a grudge that I wasn't even comfortable with, which would often turn those people to actually carrying out forms of vengeance or revenge. So those people, they did have the inner sense of justice like I did, but they would react much harsher than even I would. So, thinking about all this, of course, made me very, very curious. Were any of them wrong? The ones that took it much softer, or the ones that took it much harsher than I, were they wrong? Or was I wrong? Is there a right and wrong way to react when we're offended or when we're wronged? Well, I wanted to find some answers because I was spending way too much emotional energy on this subject. And I really needed to find a solution just so I could process it. So, of course, in order to properly process it, I want to take it to the rest of the guys on Infants. And I did this originally back in April of 2013. And myself, Matt, Glenn, Bob, and Scott got together on a panel discussion and talked about forgiveness. And so on this part one of a two-part series on forgiveness, I'm going to play selected clips from that old panel discussion that got shelved. And then in part two of Forgiveness, in an upcoming episode, I'm going to play Forgiveness Revisited. The same panel, and where you're once again going to talk about forgiveness. We're also going to talk about some of the more current events that definitely have a role to play when it comes to forgiveness. So I'm very eager and anxious, and I'm also very hopeful that you guys will enjoy it. So there you go.
Retribution is not a should not be viewed as a negative thing. It is something that has some value. Everyone believes in it at some level. If you could have somebody who committed a brutal rape, and you could say, "There's a pill, and here's a pill that we will give this guy who will never commit any type of a crime in the future. He certainly won't commit a rape or anything violent in the future. It's proven to work. There's no question. 100% effectiveness. It will work. who would be fine with that rapist being let go into society and being free? And almost no one would, because at some point people need to be held accountable for things that they did and harm that was caused. And I don't know that that's a religious concept.
Well, let me.
You should read Sam Harris. Have you read Free Will by Sam Harris?
No.
You might be interested in that, because he actually takes this on directly, and he is a straight up utilitarian. He doesn't believe in retributivism at all, and he makes some interesting arguments that because free will is really illusory, then there's really no justification for retributivism.
What we were talking about originally with the concept of holding a grudge, that the either option of the utilitarian approach or the other one where punishment has to be enacted or whatever, I know I'm summing it up in a non-lawyer way, which is probably wrong, but it seems to me that true forgiveness, at least the way that I remember it with my Mormon baggage, doesn't allow for either of those. Like, you really have to, like, not only it's okay if they get off easy, they don't deserve the punishment, but also let them do whatever they want in life from this point forward. We should forget about it. And that is not the same thing as forgiveness. My definition, you know, post-Mormonism is forgiveness is more still being utilitarian about it, but not being doing the retribution side of it. So being like in the middle rather than allowing for both of those free passes to go. Does that make sense?
So yeah, you're like, so you're only forgiving like 70%, right?
I think therein is another problem with religion, is holding forgiveness as some sort of a real virtue. And I don't necessarily think it is. It's one thing to not let it affect you and affect your daily, you know, the way you live on a daily basis.
Right.
But there is no virtue outside of just people trouting out scripture or other things to say, wow, forgiving somebody is virtue. Now, not having bile, not having bitterness, that not focusing on something on a day-to-day basis, there's value in that, but there's no virtue in saying, well, I've forgiven that person for whatever. It's a meaningless statement, and it's one I think that is just another thing that I think is a flaw of religion, is that idea of forgiveness. See, I just think forgiveness is an eternal concept, and it is such a religious concept. It's something that exists for a deity to be able to excuse some sort of wrongdoing. I think often we conflate that as mortals, as somehow we need to also be like deities and act as if it doesn't happen, as if we have some form of grace that can bless them in a way for it never to have existed. And that again is, I think, a flaw of religion, that it's a fairy tale, and it's a naive one to think that we can just, you know, wash our hand over someone and say, oh no, that doesn't exist, and it didn't happen, and we'll act as if all the wrongs caused by that misdeed did not happen and do not have some sort of effect beyond you know, what you did. And that's why I think is the problem. It's just not something. And I've quite frankly never really thought about it kind of post in my post religious phase. But the more I think about it, it just seems like another fairy tale, which just can't exist and doesn't exist except in the theoretical.
Right. What you're saying is, in the aggregate, the odds are against you, but on the margin, everybody wants to believe that the person they're forgiving isn't going to be the repeat child offender, even though statistically speaking, they are betting against, you know, their better interest, right?
Sure, yeah, but even if we're not talking about that serious of an offense, even just any real misdeed, it just makes no sense. It makes no practical sense to say, no, I forgive you. What you're saying is, look, I'm not going to really hold that against you, and I'm not going to keep bringing it up, and I'm not going to focus on it on a day-to-day basis, but I am never going to treat you likely the same way as you were treated before. Take a spouse who's been, you know, who's cheated. The person could forgive, but if they ever start seeing some cagey text messages or emails or some off behavior, are they really going to say, oh, no, what? I've forgiven them. I'm sure everything's fine. Of course not, because to do so would be naive.
because in my mind, it's like if a spouse cheats on the other loving partner or whatever, and then they ask for forgiveness and they apologize, and then that spouse says, you know what, you know, I love you, I'll give you a second chance. That the spouse that committed the offense, I think, to a degree, expects full forgiveness, which means the slate is now clean, right? Like a full-on second chance, 100% forgiveness.
Yes and no. You bring up a really interesting dilemma, at least in Mormonism, but I think in religion in general. There's kind of two trains of thought on this idea, because on the flip side of forgiveness is kind of the atonement and working through your own personal imperfections. And I don't know if you guys have heard the analogy. I've heard it both ways, and there are strong implications either way, where after a sin is committed, it's like a bullet hole or a bullet wound, and it can heal, but there's always going to be a scar. And then there's the other seminary teacher that's like, no, when you're truly forgiven, God washes it away, and it's like nothing ever happened.
There was no scar, yeah.
Yeah, and I've never gotten, like, depending on which flavor of the week it is or which Mormon you're talking to, like, there's no consensus on which way forgiveness and the atonement and working through your sins actually works, because the mind fuck goes both ways. Because if the scar remains, then that really screws up that person, because no matter what they do, they're always going to have a scar. So they're going to be constantly living this life of overcompensation, because they're and it can be for the most petty thing, like I stole the candy bar when I was 6 years old, and it's like, dude, you can let that go now, it's not a scar. But you know, people don't know where to draw the lines, because they treat it kind of as the same methodology regardless of the level of sin, especially in Mormonism. You know, you drink a coffee or you cheat on somebody, it's, you know, neither one of them is going to allow you to get into heaven, so they're kind of the same. So anyway, so which way have you guys learned it, and how does that change the situation?
Well, you know,
what about the idea?
I just want to say something real quick, and then you can go to that question. I think that paradox that you're describing there, Bob, is illustrated really interesting ways with the resurrected body of Christ. You know, because didn't you ever have this dilemma of, you know, when you're resurrected, you're completely perfect, but you know, you used the word scars. And what do you do if you see the resurrected Christ? You feel the nail prints in his hand and in his feet. And so didn't you ever have that quandary?
He could make the scars appear.
Right. Isn't that amazing?
Like, and those were going to go away once it was finally the first resurrection.
But why would he want to show the scars? Is like a reminder of the wrongs that were done against him. So it's like, are those a physical manifestation of Jesus's grudge?
Even he hasn't forgotten.
Yeah, it's his grudge.
He can't let the scars go. I love it.
Well, it's his grudge against the Jews, right? Like when he comes at Armageddon. No, like I've heard this. Like when
I think it's
his,
the Romans.
I think it was the Jews. When he sets his foot down at Gog and Magog, and then the Jews all come out to him, and they're like, oh,
Gog and Magog,
our Savior. And then they see his scars, right? And then they realize who it is. I've heard that story.
And you're thinking Golgotha.
No.
Yes. Golgotha.
Because Gog and Magog.
That's where he died.
Yeah, and that's where he comes back. So you've got that like beautiful poetic symmetry.
I must have turned on the alternate ending for that one.
Gog and Magog are the armies that are fighting against each other during the Armageddon War.
Right, and I thought Gog and Magog.
Right, My Little Pony comes down and
there's no pony. There's no pony.
What
about the idea of you know, the lesson that I loved as a kid was the woman who was a sinner who comes in and he says she loves much because much has been forgiven, and kind of that juxtaposition of people who have sinned much and have somehow found some peace and been able to really get a lot from the grace, versus people who aren't as appreciative of it. I mean, does that play in here at all?
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to say. I think for me anyway, I've always been a quite a forgiving person. It's always come naturally to me. So like when I saw Tom's question about that, you know, that's something for me that's always been very easy. And I think, you know, maybe just to to show the other side of it here, I think some of that might be related to the idea of judge not, lest you be judged.
Yeah.
So if you, you know, like you're going to be judged with the same standard that you judge other people. And so if I'm forgiving of other people and I can see past their wrongs, I mean, I think there is a practical element to it too. Like I'm not going to let my kids be around sex offenders because I've forgiven them or something. But, it, you know, for people who've wronged me personally, it's not my personality. I don't carry around grudges against people. I really don't care.
So there's an element of self-preservation in that.
Exactly.
That you're kind of hedging your bets.
Well, I'm hedging my bet, and I know what I've done. And so I know that I can't be too hard on other people because, you know, I want things to work out well for me. So I'm just going to be pretty hands off.
You want Jesus to say, Jesse, you are awesome to everybody. So I'm going to be awesome to you.
That's right. Well, let me clarify, though, because I'm not saying that I don't think that people should be held accountable. And there's certainly justice and there's punishments that need to be meted out. But I think that's on a different level than forgiveness. Like to me, the word forgiveness or grudge is something that I carry around inside of me. Like I could send somebody off to jail and not carry a grudge around about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, no, it's funny because in my world, I have the opportunity to send people away to prison for a long, long, long time. And I always get asked by people, well, do you ever want to, do you hope they get raped or do you hope they get, get killed in prison? And I got to say, I don't. I don't ever have this kind of anything other than what the law allows. I never feel like I want to physically attack them. I don't want them to be physically attacked in prison or these types of things, even though they've done horrendous things. So,
but okay, what about the ones who slip through the cracks of the justice system? Do you want to send Dexter after him?
Dexter, right? Yeah. No, I don't want to send Dexter out after them. What I want, because I, at the end of the day, I really believe in the rule of law, and so I don't want vigilante justice or anything like that. And it's easy when it's not somebody that I know or personally know. If it was my own child, if it was my own, a close friend or something, maybe I'd have that feeling. But no, I never feel, and I've caught and I have not convicted every single person that I've ever charged or felt was guilty, but what? I never feel like I know, right? I'm not perfect. Well, actually, on sex offenders, I've yet to lose one. I take that back. I've lost twice in my career. One was on a gun pointing, and one was on a person who was hiding a felon. But that's what I've lost in my life. But but I never had that feeling because I can't say why, because I really am not, at the end of the day, that type of a person, I guess, that thinks that they should be killed because...
Well, maybe not killed, but some form of retribution. So, like, if you believe that they're guilty and they slip through the cracks of the system and they're out and they're free... I mean, I don't know. Do you don't hold that personally? You just kind of go on to your next case or...
Yeah, I just go on to my next case. But you know what is funny? This is something that I find really interesting is when I talk to people about being an atheist, they never talk about what rewards will be there as if that's the basis for believing in God. Most people that I talk to talk about the punishment end. They say they believe in God because they have to believe that at some level the wrongs will be righted by God through punishment. That's what I find so interesting about religious people.
People definitely have a fundamental need to think that the world or the universe or all of existence is going to be balanced out in the end.
It's fair. It's like a fair
like the idea that to people that, okay, life is just going to be, somewhat miserable and there's injustices and pain and then that's just it. A lot of people just reject that because it feels fundamentally unfair to them.
Well, right? it doesn't feel fundamentally unfair. It is. I mean, it's like somebody who's gotten away with a lifetime of, crime. He's gotten away with it, and then he dies. It's like he beat the system. You know, there was no justice to this guy.
But the system is completely
so,
man-made.
Well, that I don't think that's really relevant. I think if it, in people's minds, including mine, if someone does something wrong, there has to be some way to that person gets, you know, their due. So if they get away with it and then they die, it's like, you know what? They're going to get their due. And that allows that level of satisfaction in your mind because
yeah,
it's
but that's
difficult.
Always that's always a subjective thing because the person who wronged at some point feels that they've done something or done enough to be able to be forgiven. So all the people that on the one hand want to be punished, those people who people believe should be punished feel that they've made enough effort or done something to be forgiven. So it really becomes so purely subjective as to who's going to be punished and who's going to be forgiven.
Right. And you just hope the Venn diagram has a lot of overlap where the two sides meet up and it magically works out, but it really doesn't. Usually the people who think they've done enough haven't really done enough. And the people who want to punish more don't realize that they're asking for more punishment than is merited or
so,
whatever.
Tom, I've got a question for you. Do you believe in an afterlife then?
I do.
And so what do you think, I mean, to the extent that you're comfortable answering this, what kind of a justice system or what kind of rewards or punishments do you think are would be handled there? How would that work?
You come back married to Glenn.
Yeah, that's true. Lifetime of hell. Now,
that's the rewards, by the way.
Toxic, I've heard.
Yeah.
in the afterlife that I quasi believe in, I guess is, I don't think that there is a justice system in it. I don't know.
Because it's fully transparent, right? Like, there's no need to do discovery and try to, you know, look at things from different angles because all is known and there's people like God who get all the angles automatically. And like, so why do we have to deal with human problems after this life? It's just magically, automatically taken care of. It's fair and lovely and there's rainbows and butterflies everywhere.
Yeah, are there rainbows and butterflies in Tom's afterlife?
Sorry, Tom, I didn't mean to like paint with a broad brush there. Maybe in yours it's like death metal and
but in the Mormon concept of
you're an ass.
I'll take it.
In the Mormon concept of the afterlife, isn't there a period of time where there is punishment and you will be you know, there will be some stripes and people will be punished for a period of time.
It's
ultimately be.
Yeah, it's at the judgment bar of God. You're supposed to go up there and then you're supposed to watch the movie of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then Jesus has got the remote and he pauses and he says, see there. That wasn't good. And then he fast forwards and then he says, that wasn't a good thing, too. And you never went to your bishop or you never came to me and asked for forgiveness. You know, I bled out of every pore for you, but you didn't take advantage of the situation. So let's fast forward. There's another one.
Mm. You know, that, I picture that video being more like chat roulette, which is just a bunch of guys masturbating.
So this goes to my other point, the grudge thing, right? So I've already exposed and made myself a little too vulnerable about the way I think about forgiveness and stuff like that. And listening to Glenn and Jesse, how it's a lot easier for them to forgive. For me, it's been very, very, very difficult to forgive, and there's a lot of reasons.
Wait,
you know?
But that's because you guys are not using the same definition. So just backing up to a little while ago, Tom, when you said, hey, Bob, so that means that you're kind of like 70% forgiving. So let's double click on that and make sure we're all on the same page. Do you need to trust somebody in order for the forgiveness to be 100%? Or is it like Glenn and Jesse's forgiveness that's a little more pragmatic where they don't let the proverbial child molester back in their home is good enough, and Tom's is a different type of forgiveness? Like, is there universal forgiveness, or is it all just like everybody's own flavors of it?
It's pretty subjective. I don't know. It's hard to say. It's like it also depends on the kind of relationship that I had with said offender.
I think you're expecting more of yourself than Glenn or Jesse is expecting of themselves. I don't mean that as a slant on them or a praise of you. I just think that you.
Well, yeah. What? Explain that.
Well,
I don't understand that.
Because I get the impression that you have such a strong time forgiving people because you want to go all the way. You really truly want to make it so the wound has no scar and you can treat them as if nothing happened. And Glenn and Jesse don't necessarily see that as a part of the formula to have successful forgiveness. They can speak up if I'm like totally bastardizing what their thoughts were, but that regardless, just assume there's a straw man with those thoughts. And I think there's a lot of people who forgive in that way versus the way you're forgiving, which is like more extreme, like really forgetting forgiveness, which I don't think actually exists in the absolute anyway. So I think you're always going to be disappointed and not be able to forgive effectively as a result.
Well, Bob, I want to add one dimension to like the way that I forgive is I'm not really thinking about the person who's wronged me anymore. And I think that might be a difference with Tom, where he kind of wants that justice. I kind of focus a little bit more on the effect that those negative thoughts towards a person has on me. And like, I don't like the way I feel when I feel that I want to take action against somebody or I want to, you know, for whatever reason, I just don't like that. I don't like myself when I'm like that. And so that is incentive for me to forgive and let that go and say, yeah, I don't need to retaliate.
Wait, but is that forgiveness?
That's the same way for me.
Is that just being pragmatic, like, you know, not thinking about something because you want to move on? Like, where's the line for you guys on moving on versus forgiving? Like, what's the extra step to make it forgiveness instead of just pragmatic, I'm moving on with my life?
Well, I don't know. But, I mean, what did you call it? You called it something like the retribution quote.
Well, back to the legal terms, it was the utilitarian, like, you still want the natural consequences to happen, but...
I just kind of let that go. I don't care. It doesn't affect me anymore.
I want to go back to what you said just a second ago, Glenn, where if someone's wronged you, you don't like the way you feel when you think about, you know, retaliating against them,
yeah.
kind of entertaining the idea of revenge.
Yeah.
So
for very long, and I might be playful with it from time to time.
This makes me curious. So when you watch a movie like Taken, You can't watch that movie and actually get involved, right? So you're not really.
What is it? Tell me the movie.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Liam Neeson's daughter Taken? Goes to Europe.
It's a horrible movie. The guy's a complete tool.
Is she? She was the one.
The guy lets all the other girls go. We care about this one stupid girl who's selfish annoying. Versus all the other girls because they haven't highlighted them. Screw Liam Neeson's character in Taken.
Okay. All right. How about like Braveheart, right?
Wait. How about Count of Monte Cristo?
That's a good one.
Okay. So the guy's whole life gets like ripped out from underneath him.
Yeah.
And he really didn't do anything to justify it. And then he has this huge long revenge process that he goes through where he just wants to burn everything down, and then eventually he kills everybody in the movie, you know, gets his wife back, and at the end he's like, well, now I guess I can let all the hate go, and you know, it's all happy and butterflies. But it's like, you just spent the last 20 years of your life, you know, being miserable. And I really like that story, because I think if I were in that situation, like if somebody had put me in jail for something that I hadn't done and they'd falsely accused me and killed people and, you know, my whole life was ruined, yeah, I would want revenge. I mean, that would not be the kind of situation where I could find forgiveness for someone easily.
But in The Count of Monte Cristo, and I'm more familiar with the book than I am the films because I didn't like the films, but he...
And you're a snob. Yeah. Okay, keep going.
He manipulates... He manipulates these people, and I'm remembering like one daughter who's like this really innocent pawn that he uses in this revenge scheme, that he becomes as bad as the people who put him away.
Absolutely. And yeah. Glenn, I've read the book and watched the movie, so I know what you're talking about. But
cool.
She's not in the movie. I didn't think she was.
Yeah.
He becomes worse than everyone else who has wronged him. I mean, he takes things to the next level every step of the way.
But I guess what my point is both to Glenn and Jesse, since you guys seem to be, you know, more of the forgiving type. Oh, it's not a big deal. So if you guys are like that, so
I'm not now, you dick.
Everyone but you, Tom.
So when you get involved in a story like that, do you find yourself kind of disconnected from the main character? Like, I can't, Why is he so filled with hate? Why is there so much of a grudge and revenge motive behind this? I don't get it. Do you feel that? Do you
no,
feel
I,
the disconnect?
I totally get it. I feel totally connected to him. And if it were something egregious, I mean, I guess maybe I've never had someone do something that bad to me where I've taken it that heavily. But like, I mean, I can honestly say the church, like the institution of the church, like I have a grudge. I feel I'm still upset. Like it's not going away anytime soon.
Isn't part of that because the wrongs are ongoing, whether it be absolutely with your family or some of the residual effects?
Yeah, absolutely. Huh. So I'm not saying it's absolute, but I think compared to most people, I have an easier time apologizing or finding forgiveness.
But if you're bringing the church into it, I don't feel any anger towards the church. And I think part of that is because the people I kind of give them the benefit of the doubt, where I think that they're doing what they think they should be doing. And so
church headquarters, the institution.
Yeah.
So really? Like you see Elder Holland, I don't know if you saw that BBC interview.
I did. Yeah.
Of him where he's trying to like lie to the reporter.
He wasn't trying to lie. I think he was like super, super defensive because that BBC reporter was being really aggressive with him.
Yeah.
You know, he had been, what was the Strengthening the Saints Committee or something like that? People had been evasive to him about that. And, you know, so Holland was kind of stumbling over it. We could probably put the clip in there for it because it's on YouTube.
Yeah. So I'm referring specifically to the part where he asks him about the penalties and death oaths in the temple.
Yeah.
And he asked him a question and gave what was blatantly a false answer to it. And then the guy had to make a follow up and he said, but you used to do that, didn't you? And he said, well, yeah, we used to.
See, I think that was the sort of thing
I see, and I can attribute a bad motive to it.
I think Holland was very defensive with that question, and he didn't understand what the reporter was trying to ask. You know, the reporter was trying to ask a question about Mitt Romney's allegiance.
Okay.
And Holland was being defensive, you know, about the way that anti-Mormons claim there's this terrible slit your throat part of the temple. So he was very proud to kind of cut off the reporter and go, oh, we don't do that anymore. We changed it. That's gone. And that wasn't really what the guy was asking.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit then, because your main point is you don't have any grudge against them because you don't think that the people in the institutions mean to do things wrong, or they don't have ill intentions.
And we
is
can
that
even
what
take,
you're saying?
Yeah, and we can even take Boyd Packer as an example of that, because he says some pretty awful things to people that he disapproves of, but the reason he's doing that is because he thinks that's his job.
Well, sure. So how do you distinguish between someone like that and someone like a terrorist who thinks what they're doing is right and they're willing to put their life on the line and, you know, live their whole life to an ideal and violate other people's rights or say horrible things, or, you know, a despot or a totalitarian who thinks what they're doing is best?
The Westboro Baptist Church, who really,
right,
truly believe what they're doing is right. And
well, and what
let's
if,
just go straight
what if,
to Hitler. Well,
yeah, well, as always.
I'm not giving them a pass for what they're doing, but I understand that their motivations are pure in the sense that they think that what they're doing is right. Now, I think they're wrong, so I'm judging them, but I'm not judging them against my standard where I feel like they're doing things. I don't know how to explain it. I'm understanding of where they're coming from, even though I don't agree or approve of what they're doing.
Right.
And you've kind of always been this way, right, Glenn? This isn't like a new phenomenon or a new line of thinking.
Yeah. He came out of the womb that way.
I don't know. I don't know when this happened, Tom.
Glenn has lots of empathy, but I think part of the problem here is that we don't have adequate language to be able to describe all these different nuances. Like forgiveness is really a bigger idea, and having a grudge, it's really a bigger idea than one word can describe. So there's so many different facets to it that you can slice it different ways that don't, that, you know, it's not always congruous with other situations in which you'd use the same word.
Hi, this is Tom from Utah County, and I sometimes participate on Infants on Thrones podcast. You can comment on this episode on the website infantsonthrones.com, and if you really like what you hear, consider giving the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. And also, if you would like to have access to the full, unedited panel discussion of this Forgiveness Part 1 episode, you'll need to subscribe to us through patreon.com/infants. And there, for as little as $1 an episode, you can get access to a lot of pre-release content and unreleased content, and also some videos, and you can interact with many of the infants through there. It's a really great place. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Have you had any interesting or powerful experiences when someone has forgiven you? When someone has forgiven me? I've never done anything wrong that... You usually hear the phrase forgive and forget. And I don't forget, you know. Even when I forgive, it just means, like, I was going to say I don't hold it against them, but I still kind of do, you know. It's in the ledger against them as this happened. This is that kind of person. You know, like, you're learning things about them. So I don't know, like... When I forgive them, like, do I give them other opportunities to, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm a forgiving person, but, I don't want to be a stupid person either. You know, that you're always making the same mistake because you keep trusting people that show that they're not trustworthy. You know, does that make any sense? So I can forgive somebody, but that doesn't mean that I've forgotten or I haven't learned from the situation.
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.